Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, Tuesday's edition. That means Suzanne Muschen will be here a little bit later. You know, she's the co-host of the Big Payoff podcast you can hear on WGNradio.com. Generally, we focus on women's issues in the workplace during that segment. And, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but the Olympic talk doesn't stop with the way some women athletes are being referred to. Suzanne's got a thought or two on that, so we'll kick that around. I don't know if John Najarian does. He joins us at the top on Tuesdays. You watch him on CNBC or follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Mr. Najarian, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you.
All right, so everyone finishes at a record high yesterday. Kind of expected things to be a little bit lower today, right? And that's where we are.
Correct. I don't know if I figured that we would be lower just because the way it's been, we're setting record after record after record. I've not remembered or seen a market that has been so strong, but these aren't 200 and 300 point gains. They're just 50 or 70 points. Given that it's a, 18,000 point index, the Dow Jones, that is, and 2,200 point index for the S&P, those aren't extraordinary moves, but they're certainly frustrating a lot of the bears. Today's one of the days they get their a little thin gruel, but they get some gruel nonetheless.
Not very much, just enough to make them really hungry, maybe.
Sure.
I've been reading that they think this will continue through the end of the year. Is that the way you see it?
I'll be surprised if it does.
Will you? Okay.
I think we will. It's unlikely, at least in my mind, Steve, that either at Jackson Hole, which is coming up in less than 2 weeks, or with any of the other Fed commentary, that we'll see a September rate hike. I do think it'll be after the election. But so that, I think, continues as far as the low interest rate environment here. And even when they finally move rates up a little, I think it's a one and done again for an entire year, just as it was last December when they made that 25 basis point move. I don't see us getting off to a big run to interest rates hikes and a series of them. But to your point, as far as will we keep climbing the wall of worry? Yeah, and it depends on what kind of issues come before us with this election and with various tax proposals and the rest. So I would still think that we could have a little jostling around rather than a smooth ride up.
You mentioned the Fed. A couple of the governors spoke today. New York Fed President William Dudley said that there could be an increase as soon as next month. And then later from Atlanta, Dennis Lockhart, I should say, the Fed president there, said he thinks maybe one more this year, but he didn't say September. So you think maybe after the election, but September is less likely?
I believe so. I mean, the Bank of England just moved a week ago, or a little bit over a week ago now, and I don't think that our Fed is about to jump and cause the markets any turmoil ahead of the election, and I don't think that they see the need for it as strong just yet. And in fact, with some of the recent slowdowns, even in some of the cars and some of the big ticket items, I think that they might decide to err on the side of caution. I do think they should have moved a while ago, Steve, but now that they haven't for so long, I think they're kind of in stuck in a spot where the rest of the world is kind of forcing their hand.
Well, how about that, though? If the Fed, if they think that it's the right thing to do to raise rates in October, isn't it the wrong thing to do to put it off because there's an election coming?
If it were extremely necessary, in other words, if they really saw wage inflation and or producer price inflation, I think then they would. But I don't think they've seen that or will see it prior to December. And I'm not even thinking they'll see it in December. I just think that they'll make the move nonetheless to more or less buy themselves some room so that they can do what the Bank of England just did. They took rates from a half a point down to a quarter of a point. We've just moved off a zero to a quarter point, so I think they'd like to build a little room at the Fed in case they need it.
And some economic data today. Consumer confidence, or the price index, was unchanged. Housing starts were up, right? More than expected, but they were hoping for better numbers when it came to the consumer price index. Is any of that weighing into this market, or it just kind of is where it was going to be anyway today?
I think they're pretty happy with, obviously, the number of people getting back to work, but they would like to see more wage inflation, and they're just not seeing it yet. And so with the corporations, I think in the last GDP report, only spending was only up 1%. They were looking for a significantly larger amount. The Fed is, that is, not the economists. And until they get that, I don't think they have to move on either interest rates or buybacks or anything else with that they've been doing with bonds.
So George Soros sells and Warren Buffett buys. What's going on with Apple stock?
Yeah, well, Soros traded out of his, and a number of others did too. I believe Ackman and David Tepper both exited Apple as well. And Buffett added not quite 6 million shares, but almost. He went from 9-point-something to 15-point-something million shares of Apple. So it's pretty clear he's a true believer in what Apple's doing. And on the other hand, the other guys either were cutting losses if they had bought it significantly higher than where it is now, or if they were smart enough to buy it where Warren bought it down around in the low 90s, with it trading all the way up through 104 at the end of July, they had opportunities to take some nice profits. And a number of them did, and Warren was stepping right up to buy it when they did.
We're talking to John Najarian about what's going on Wall Street today. What are your recommendations for the day? You got a stock you're watching?
Well, I do like Morgan Stanley. Some activist investors got involved with Morgan now, and I think the stock is cheap if you're somebody who believes that interest rates might start migrating higher. Brokers are some of the first to feel that in a good way. Of course, homeowners don't like to feel it, but the brokers, that's something with margin loans and the rest that they get very quickly to the bottom line. So Morgan Stanley would be one of the stocks that I would be buying here.
John Najarian, great to talk to you again on this Tuesday afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen.
You bet. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info is just around the corner. We're going to talk about sushi and women's clothing. I think I'll see what Andrew wants to talk about when he gets here. Minutes after 12, this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago. Andrew, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
All right, so I thought maybe, you know, it seems like maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just think of it when it happens, but it seems like more often than not we're talking about food.
Well, it is the business lunch.
It is the business lunch, and it seems that more often than not when we talk about food, you come in empty-handed, so I'm not quite sure how that works.
You're the host of the lunch.
I see. That's
you
right.
Provide the food.
Can I tell you, we're going to talk about a sushi restaurant, sushi's just not my thing. I've tried it a couple times, and it doesn't work for me, which is good because Godzilla is not my thing either. And here we are where these two topics are colliding.
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting story. So there's a guy, he's an immigrant from Thailand. He comes to Chicago. I'd give you his name, but I would butcher it, and I just can't. But his first name is Ed.
Ed, we'll go with Ed.
Okay, so he opens a sushi place in Jefferson Park on North Milwaukee Avenue about a year ago. He calls it Godzilla Sushi, and it's pretty popular. So he says, well, I'm going to open up another one in Lakeview at 1408 West Diversey. He's getting ready to open, and he gets the dreaded letter from the Toho Company Limited, who are the producers of the Godzilla monster movies.
Right.
And they give him a cease and desist order, stop using our name.
Who knew? There's a new Godzilla movie out.
You know, these movies have been made for 50 years, and there's been over 30 Godzilla movies made by this company. And like you say, there's one out this year, only it's just in Japan and in other Asian markets.
Is it the same actor who's played Godzilla all the way through?
You mean the same monster?
Oh, is it a monster? Yeah.
No, I don't know. But, yeah, so there's a new one out, and this is a very valuable brand, and this company is known for suing or threatening to sue anybody who tries to use the Godzilla image or name. They've threatened Subway sandwiches, Honda Motors, and then, of course, Ed here in Chicago trying
isn't
to...
Isn't there a Godzilla glue? Have you heard of that?
It's Gorilla Zoo.
A gorilla glue, yeah.
Glue.
Okay. Yeah, right. Gorilla Zoo, same thing. Right. Okay, so Ed said, I like Ed's reaction. He's like, okay.
I can't fight this?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm going to win from it.
Right. So he decides to name his sushi shop's Gorilla King, which isn't quite Godzilla, but actually it's kind of close because in Japanese, Godzilla means gorilla whale.
Okay.
It's two words, gorilla and whale, put together and you get Godzilla. So for Asians, maybe, you know, they might get the connection, but he's off and running, and the good name of Godzilla, I guess, remains with the movie company.
No, it just gorilla sounds like Godzilla. I think that probably has more to do with it. So we're talking about psychology in customers a little bit today,
mm-hmm.
and we can do that with him because he has an interesting menu, right? Everything is $2.95.
Right, right. And he has a special now. You know, for August, you get a free $2.95 item with every $2.95 item. But you're right. It's because I think you go to sushi restaurants and you're not sure what you're ordering. Maybe a lot of people are into it. I'm like you. I'm not.
Right.
But if everything's $2.95, it must all be the same thing, right? So you can just freely pick off the
menu. Or you're not afraid. You know, I'll try this for $2.95, that for $2.95.
Yeah.
Rather than one thing for $12.95.
I guess so. And it seems to be working for him. Like I say, he opened one in Jefferson Park and is now opening one on Diversity in Lakeview.
All right. Go visit Gorilla Sushi and then go shop for women's clothing at Francesca's.
Mm-hmm.
The Italian restaurant chain, they're not suing... This is a bigger chain, right? The clothing chain than the restaurant chain.
Yeah, I had never heard of this, but I should have because they have 600 stores across the country. They started in Houston in 1999, so it's a pretty fast-growing company. And again, the psychology of how these work. So they're going to open up a new place at 5301 North Clark in Andersonville here in the city, but they've already got about a handful of other places in Water Tower and Lincoln Park and whatnot. But the psychology of the places that they look like independent boutiques, even
right.
though they're part of a chain, and they're all pretty small, 1,400 square feet.
Right. So I'm thinking 5,300 block of North Clark Street. That's not the home of big shops, right?
No. But they clearly want to, create the ambiance and impression that they're a local place,
right?
And that they have curated merchandise, which they do.
Sure.
And I was reading an analysis, a business analysis of the company itself, and what they have is lots of styles but limited quantity, and that gives the impression of scarcity. Which makes it seem like, oh, look, there's only one of those necklaces. I better get it, right?
It's like buying a hotel room on Priceline. There's only an airline ticket, right?
Uh-huh.
Only three left.
Right.
So you go into Francesca's, and you see something you like, and you're like, well, there's only one here in my size.
Yeah.
I'd better pick it up.
Right. And they keep changing the merchandise, so the customers keep coming back, and it's a fun thing for the customers to go into these Francescas and see what's new. And they even advertise everything you see is uniquely yours, and they try a selling approach where if you go to a party, you will not see these clothes on anyone else.
Is that right?
Yes. Yes. On their website, they say no party twins. Which I guess is a phrase that about...
Oh, remember that Christmas party you and I had the same suit on last year? So right. Embarrassing.
Right, that dark suit with the white shirt.
Yeah, no one else had it.
I told you, I don't wear that clothes.
I like it because they're giving you something unique, and they're sort of pretending to be unique, and they're not, I mean, in a way.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's market is 18 to 35-year-old women, and so they're... This is a group that's very close conscious, and this is obviously, as you joke, this is not something most men worry about,
right.
Seeing your clothes on someone else. Actually, it's kind of funny when you do see it as a man, but I think for a lot of women, they don't like this.
Yeah, it's like, hell, wow, you shop at TJ Maxx, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll follow that and keep an eye on that. And I do like the idea, you know, because we spent much of the morning on Bill and Wendy's show talking about people buying their clothes online now, you know, like Trunk Club, and there's another stitch we were talking about where, you know, outfits will mail you something and you'll choose. So these shops need to do something to get people, foot traffic in the door.
Right.
And
right.
It seems to be working for Francesca.
You know, I saw that about Macy's closing all those stores, and they were saying that people don't want to shop in stores anymore. I think I just don't understand it because it's such a social thing. But evidently, people would prefer to shop online for things. But we'll see. We'll see how this all plays out.
I think it's a generational thing. Where do people read more about this?
DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
Andrew Herman, nice to see you again.
Okay.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:36, Tuesday afternoon on 720 WGN. All right, so last week, Suzanne Muchen was in the studio, co-host of The Big Payoff at WGN+. And we were talking about the Olympics and sexism and all that, right?
And you really hit back.
A little bit. And so I want to get back to that.
A lot of it.
A lot of it. Okay.
Yep.
I want to return to that, but to make sure we have time first, you brought up the story about Ivanka Trump in Croatia. Businesswoman, very successful. Did you notice the guy who climbed Trump Tower when they arrested him, it was in her shoe store?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. Steve, the climber?
Was it Steve? Was his name Steve?
Yeah.
I brushed right by that. Anyway, so she's in Croatia.
This is so troubling to me because you and I have talked about this. You've met Ivanka,
right? Yeah, very impressive.
She is impressive. She's wise. She seems street smart. She seems the sane one until this week where she posts on Instagram, and let's just remind ourselves how many, we're talking a million plus followers, a picture of herself, and we're going to get to what she was wearing in just a moment.
Okay.
In Croatia, on holiday with Wendy Murdoch, who is Rupert Murdoch's ex.
Which I didn't know any of this.
Right. Who is rumored to be dating Vladimir Putin. No joke. Okay, and whether or not that rumor is true or false, real news outlets, New York Times, CNBC, people are reporting it. So let's just assume
they're reporting that she is
that Wendy Murdoch
Putin.
Is dating
okay.
Putin.
Okay.
So let's just even assume all of that isn't true. But the rumor is out there. What the heck are you doing, Ivanka, posting pictures of yourself right in the 80-day window where this is also a very, very volatile issue of Trump's relationship with Putin?
She is very, you know, when I met her, I was interviewing her for a book, right? And, you know, in the book, blah, blah, blah. But before we even started, you know, she came in trying to intimidate me, I think.
Oh, really?
Very stern.
Oh.
Who listens to this? How many people are going to see this? I want to know what this is. You know, so she was all about the business of it.
Right.
Very aware of the impression it was going to make. So you know she's aware of this.
She, first of all, this is the moment where everyone's watching her for real.
Yeah.
And the judgment miss here on everybody's part. But first of all, let's just talk about why are you in Croatia?
Right. Your dad could use the help.
Your dad could use the help.
And the sons went on some safari or hunting trip recently, too.
What are you doing? It's like this whole, if you know anything right now, this is the window. This is the home stretch. Impressions matter. The controversy isn't needed. Why do this? And then let's just talk about what she was wearing.
And it comes out when there's talk of Paul Manafort being paid by the pro-Russian party in Ukraine.
Yes, $12 million. So she's doing that. And by the way, she's wearing an outfit that
now, this is the third time you brought up her clothes.
Well, I'm bringing it up for a reason.
Okay, but I mean,
rumored to be. Okay, and you can, if you know the brands, you can look at a lie in some of the brands.
Oh, I'll know the brands.
Yeah, I know you do, just like you know Beyonce.
Right.
We actually one day should do a thing where we play Beyonce songs and you can tell me if you know the words.
Oh, I wouldn't know them, no. I mean,
it's a sad admission, but
there's a put a ring on it.
Yeah, good, okay.
Fella.
So anyway, the outfit itself is rumored to be above $4,000 for what she's wearing. And again, I'm not talking about this to pick on her as a woman or anything. I'm just saying impressions matter, what people perceive of you. And in a moment where you're trying to actually show a particular narrative of seriousness and being for the middle class, you're on vacation in Croatia with Wendy Murdoch.
Tricky thing, though, I mean, because we're not supposed to judge women by what they wear.
It's not about what she's wearing. It's about the fact that they're attempting to send a message of being of the people.
Yeah, but it's about how much what she's wearing costs.
I would say that if it were a guy, too. If he were obviously in an Hermes tie, which from a brand, can we go there?
Sure. Okay. I just recently, thank God for the Oprah controversy, so I learned how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So if there were something that obviously branded that people knew was a $1,000, $2,000 tie, you'd say the same thing.
All right, let's go to the Olympics.
Let's go. Last week you were a little hard on me.
Do you think?
Yes, people on social media were actually trying to stick up for me.
Well, that's fine.
Not that I needed it.
My point was that I think sometimes we look for offense. And rather than try to understand what the speaker was trying to say, you know, we say, oh my God, look at the words she used or he used. He must be a sexist.
Right. Well, you made another interesting point, which was that is what gets people to read an article. So if we really wanted to get people to read about her, we have to talk about her husband who's...
This is the headline where it says wife of Chicago Bear wins. Right.
Okay. If it were a one-off thing, we could have an article, we could have an argument about that writer, that particular angle of entry. But this has now become prevalent. I mean, the most recent one was that Andy Murray won his second consecutive gold medal in Olympic tennis. And a reporter said to him,
yeah,
wow, this is amazing, Andy. How do you feel about being the first person to ever win two gold medals in the Olympics in tennis? To which, thankfully, he responded, I actually think that Venus and Serena have each won four.
Right.
I mean, come on. You can't, no, you're giving me a look like you're about to enter into an argument with me. If you are, go.
I'm not going to enter into an argument with you, but this is kind of what I'm saying. So let's try to understand what the questioner's mind was rather than what the questioner's words were. I mean, do you really think he was... What do you think the intention of that was? Is that
the
women's tennis doesn't count?
No, that's the whole problem, Steve, is I think this was actually unintentional. I think that the mindset...
Don't you think he meant you're the first singles player to win two gold medals?
No, I don't think he is.
Okay.
So I'm just saying, I don't think it's about him thinking to himself, women don't matter. I'm thinking that women aren't in this narrative the way they need to be. And when they are in the narrative, it's often so derogatory. So you have the women of the, you know, famous... unbelievable five women gymnasts who are strong as heck, real athletes, with the news reporters commenting on the fact that they look like they just stepped out of a mall.
Who said that?
Oh, I mean, I can find
I missed that one.
Oh.
That's bad.
Thank you.
That was just a small victory for me. There are others. I mean, we were talking about this article, and there are a number of examples.
The Korean volleyball player who's 6'3".
And the guy said, well, she's too tall to find a husband in Korea.
The title of the article was, Boyfriend, a Tall Order.
Okay,
so
I get that.
Just give me some.
Oh, no, I definitely will give you
here.
Some. But my only thing is, but I would say that you have to try to give the questioner a little leeway too, or you know, you can't be sitting there waiting
to getcha,
yeah,
like
gotcha,
a gotcha
sort of thing.
Here's where I think the issue lies.
And I think the Andy Murray one is a little more forgivable.
Okay,
we disagree.
We disagree, and it's also out of context. Here's where I think the real issue lies. It's in training. And giving people who are reporting on sports that involve women as well some kind of rule set or roadmap to ensuring that their reporting actually values women as athletes. I don't think that's occurring. And we could go to all of these examples and say they're all one-offs. Each of the reporters was just, it was a misstep.
I'll say one other thing.
Please.
This is the world's biggest sporting event,
yes,
where media from all over the world,
correct,
are focused, and you've got a lot of reporters and a lot of athletes and a lot of commentary.
Yeah.
So you're going to get some bad things.
It's true.
You know,
the number of bad things is large. I mean, the German commentator who was reporting on
about the Blondie.
Yes. Come on, Steve. He says, well, why don't we hear from Blondie?
Yeah, right. No, there's some things that were unforgivable or indefensible.
Okay.
I'll say that. I'm just saying, but there's a lot of data out there.
Having
said that, there was a study by Cambridge University that looked at how female athletes are referred to when compared to men. And I think aside from the one-offs, I think this really speaks of it. Let me just read a bit of this. Notable terms that cropped up as common word associations or combinations for women but not men in sport: aged, older, pregnant, married, unmarried. The study found that top word combinations for male athletes were fastest, strong, big, real and great.
I love that.
Now, that's, yes. that speaks to the real issue.
And it speaks to the training, right? So if they were, if reporters who were reporting to the Olympics, if their media and news outlets said, I want to just share some statistics with you just so that you're aware.
Right.
I think that would go a long way.
So I will agree with you that it's an issue that needs to be addressed.
Thank you.
I will just disagree with you that the outliers defined it.
Oh, Steve.
How's that?
The I just listed like six
kumbaya.
Examples.
Kumbaya. We just ended
That's
on the same
page. That's
not
the goal page. Of our segment, isn't kumbaya, Steve?
Sometimes it should be. Okay, well, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Listen to Suzanne's podcast at WGNplus.com. Suzanne Mushin.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Back to school. Back to school. To prove to Dad that I'm not a fool.
It's 12:51. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It is back to school. We're going to talk specifically about back to college. You know, I've got a high school senior. I guess he's a freshman in college now that we're going to take to his school next week. My daughter is a junior in college, so I'm a little familiar with this. But one of the things that surprised me when we got involved in the shopping and all of that, the preparation with the dorms and blah, 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 was how influential the big box stores were, like Target and things like that, sort of having locations and presences on the campus so that you could order your clothes from Bed Bath & Beyond, order your soap or whatever, and have it delivered there. Well, so we're going to talk with Lauren Zumba about that. She wrote a piece in the Chicago Tribune, and I want to talk about that, Lauren, but also then about how these stores try to keep these college kids for the rest of their lives. Welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, let's start moving in, right? This is big business for these big box stores.
Absolutely. And if you think about, you know, like you said yourself, you have personal experience. Freshmen in college getting ready for their first year off at school, or even an upperclassman getting ready for their first off-campus apartment. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you need for that.
That's kind of what it is. It's those two ages, right? It's the freshmen and the juniors.
Right.
Sophomores, not so much.
Not so much, but even there, I'm sure there's lots they're stocking up on, too.
Okay, so what do these stores do, like Bed Bath & Beyond and Target? What do they do to try to attract the customers?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you've seen all the ads that are out there right now. And even though that's really about making as many sales as they can this season, you know, a lot of the stores will also take a longer-term view. And for them, it's really, you know, one of the first chances to you know, look at a new generation of customers.
I think that, you know, parents of students are accustomed to getting school supply lists from their elementary and high school or whatever, and you know, sort of requirements or suggestions from universities. I had no idea that there actually are registrations at some of these stores, like a bridal registry. Students can go and register for what they need at Target.
Right. Target does them. A number of other retailers do them as well. You might see it called a graduation wish list, but it functions, you know, exactly the same way. They can list off all the things they want and, you know, nudge to the parents. And some stores also...
It is nudge to the parents, right? I mean, I hope that the aunts and the grandparents aren't shopping for back to school for their grandkids.
Oh, you never know. I mean, maybe that graduation present, right, instead of a gift card, you know, they can...
Well, I guess there's
something
to that.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then there's is Bed Bath & Beyond. I love this idea where you can buy a subscription of shampoo.
That's Target, actually.
Oh, it's Target.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And it's not just for college students, but they do, you know, specifically promote it to students and their parents. You know, if a kid's on campus, they don't have a car, not that easy transportation, you can just get it shipped straight to you. Or stuff the parent thinks the kid might not be all that inclined to buy for themselves, like the cleaning supplies or...
And then it would come to them automatically.
Exactly.
So you would say, I need spick and span once every 6 weeks, and you get a new jar of spick and span.
That's the idea.
And the college student would open it, say, damn, it's spick and span again, put it under the sink and not touch it.
I guess they haven't yet figured out how to make Target make the kid use it, but they can at least get it to you.
Okay, so we've got them, right? And it's not unusual for these stores to open up sort of satellites on campus. A lot of that's happening just at Columbia, right?
Yes.
I don't know if they have a satellite store, but Columbia is sort of being wooed by these stores.
Columbia is. You know, Target's opening up a campus in Hyde Park, pretty close to the University of Chicago. You know, they've also got one near Columbia University where they host a, you know, freshman welcome week party where they invite all the kids, you know, they bust them out from campus to the Target, which is, you know, partly a way to just, you know, show the mall where it is and give them a coupon to hopefully bring them back.
Show the shiny faces and the red dots and all that. Okay, so that's brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. Competing with online or trying to foster online as well. But, you know, Amazon has a huge presence, and I'm interested in what's happening at the University of Illinois, where the college bookstore is actually ceding some of its space to Amazon for almost like a product depot space.
Right. So this is something that Amazon's been doing more recently. Since 2015, they've put about a dozen of these pickup centers on college campuses. So it's a centralized spot on campus where students can have their packages delivered, drop off returns. Amazon.
And that's kind of the key. It's for the returns.
Exactly. Yeah, because logistics on campus can be kind of tricky. You know,
sure.
A lot of students don't have a safe spot where you can get it delivered. They also order a lot of things. So instead of Amazon making multiple trips out to every dorm, just bring it all to one spot.
And so you've got the bookstore that is sort of eating its own poison, right? Or it's feeding its enemy. I don't know. You pick your metaphor. But.
Yeah. So they're giving up some space over to Amazon. But I talked to the owners of the bookstore, and they said they know these kids are shopping on Amazon already. They've already seen the textbook sales go down, and they don't mind from their perspective. They see it as a way, if we can at least get them to come to the bookstore to pick up their order from Amazon.
Maybe they'll buy a Snickers on the way out.
Exactly.
All right. So how do these stores take this flurry of business when kids are 18, 19, 20 and make them customers of Target or Bed Bath & Beyond when they turn 50?
I think they're still figuring out all those answers too. We're talking about Amazon, and one thing that they've really promoted is the discounted student Prime membership. So if you're a student with a .edu email address, you can get 6 months of Prime for free, which means the free, speedier shipping.
A lot of spick and span under the sink.
Right.
Or things that they actually want.
Or things they actually want, yeah. And then after those 6 months, it's half its usual price.
Okay.
And one of the retail analysts I talked to said that, once you give someone a taste of that convenience, it's really hard to give up, especially if it's a student who hasn't already been, shopping at brick and mortar stores this year, for years. Someone who's already used to that, might be less inclined, and knows they can do that.
They'll be less inclined to get on the bus and find Target.
Either less inclined to switch, or it just might take them a little bit longer to switch over to the online.
That's Lauren Zumbach. She writes about it. You can read it at ChicagoTribune.com. Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.